This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Oh, hi, my name's Jeanette and I'm now alcohol-free for around 150 days, which is a miracle, to say the least. I've been trying to go alcohol-free for about a decade, on and off, doing a month here, a week here, 2 months here, you know the score. But now I'm 150 days in and absolutely loving it. Life is so much better. Being part of the OTI community has helped me vastly. It's fun. It looks at what you're gaining, not what you're missing out, which was a mistake I made before. I always thought I was missing out on life when I wasn't drinking. Oh my God, how wrong was I? Life is great without a drink. Just try it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome to Over the Influence. As you know, this is the world's, probably, fastest growing alcohol-free podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you are joining us for the first time, I'll just give you a very, very quick recap because we want to crack on with today's guest because there is just so much to talk about in this episode. In a nutshell, my name is Sharon Hartley. I am from Lancashire in the northwest of England. Mum of three, wife of one, got a dog. Did a 90-day alcohol challenge more than 1,000 days ago. It will never not surprise me. It is all bloody brilliant. Yes, there are some days that are shit, but it's massively, massively superb being sober and choosing the alcohol-free life. I don't do this on my own. My co-host is Freddie, who is in New Zealand. He is already in the future.
Hello, Shaz. It's a pleasure to be here as always. So yes, hello, everybody. I am future Freddie calling from New Zealand. I am 39 years old and I am about 850 days alcohol free. For a long time, my life looked very different. In a high powered corporate job where I was working hard, playing hard and drinking very hard as well. But I realised I could not make my goals and my dreams come true if I was hungover half of the week. So I stopped drinking. Started living what I hoped was something nearer towards the life I imagined. Broke some world records, won some ultra marathons, got a lot happier, healthier and more confident. And I'm so excited and happy to be here today.
Fantastic. Thank you. And so let me try and do a few maths here. When this episode is broadcast, background burn, get a load of this shit. It'll be 1 year alcohol free. It'll have smashed it.
Yeah, it takes me a few weeks to edit this nonsense down to something that people can actually listen to. But yeah, by the time this podcast comes out, I will have been a year and a week actually alcohol free. So awesome. I'm delighted with that. My name's Ben. I'm a podcast producer. I moved up to Liverpool with a big promotion to run three big, shiny, glossy radio stations for Europe's biggest radio group. Got very stressed, hated the job. Was made redundant, drank more, met these guys. They started talking about sobriety. They got in my head. I thought, oh, actually, maybe my drinking's ramped up a bit too much because of stress. Anyway, now I run my own business. I love it. I've never been happier, healthier, and alcohol-free life is for me. Now, it's not just for the year. It's definitely for the long term because I'm a better version of myself now that I don't drink. So,
wow. I love that. I just love everything you said there, Ben. Well done.
Thanks.
Big up yourself.
Yeah.
Big up
yourself.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about you. Enough of your wins.
Yeah.
On this whole alcohol-free journey, we meet so many incredible people. And again, this series has just been about sharing some fantastic stories and meeting some really inspirational guests. There is so much to say about our next guest. Your CV is as long as my arm. There's so many conversations we can have on this episode. So I am going to stop. I am going to say welcome, a huge welcome to Over the Influence, to Don McGregor. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here. You are young, you are male, you are sober, you are successful, and it's just brilliant. Like I said, I don't really know where to start. So Dom, I'd like you just to pick up and just tell us who you are, what you do, and where it all started.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. And that conversation there is just so inspiring, listening to all your own personal journeys and where you are. And Ben, congratulations for when you get to a year. The first year is always the funnest, most inspiring time of the journey. So I'm very pleased for you. And yeah, a little bit about me. So yeah, my name's Dominic. I am coming up to 5 years sober now. Yeah, what have I done? So I founded a company called Social Chain, which I founded when I was 20 years old, after dropping out of university. I grew that to 200 million revenue, 750 people across the UK, US, Germany, floated the business on the stock exchange and exited in August 2020. And then since then, I've kind of been advising entrepreneurs as well as advising the UK government on a number of areas in terms of communication and how they can just be better. And that's kind of the overview of what I say to people. And for me, yeah, sobriety is the reason I'm still here today, I think it's probably fair to say. And the reason I've succeeded what I have succeeded is because of sobriety. So similar to what Freddie was saying earlier, you know, high stress, high work hard, play hard kind of attitude. And when I was 22 years old, 21 years old, and really going on this route of starting the business and seeing what I portrayed to be the right route to go down as an individual, finding myself celebrating a lot of successes and a lot of highs and a lot of good times in the business, I ended up sleepwalking into a problem. And that problem was alcohol dependency. That problem went from being weekends to being weekdays to being every day, all day. And I needed to do something about it. And I went to speak to a therapist, and I had two options in my mind, the way I looked at it. Either give up drinking or give up everything that I had in my life. And this is going to kind of crazy, considering what I just gave you as the instruction, is that that was a real moral debate about what I do. I didn't see a life, or I didn't know what a life would be like about alcohol at that age. You know, you're a 23-year-old guy, your entire life revolves around it. It actually weighed on my mind that I should give up everything else. And yeah, you know, that was a big internal kind of conversation with myself. And thankfully, we're here today having the conversation, looking back at things that went a certain way. So I'm thankful to say that sobriety was a path I chose. And as you guys were saying earlier, the enlightenment it's given me over the last 5 years has definitely been a driving factor in everything I've achieved.
Amazing. I'm just going to jump straight back in. I know Ben is itching to jump in. I know Freddie is itching to jump in. I can see them. They've got so many questions. Dom, 5 years sober. You know, you're on the brink of that, which is just incredible. You're only 28 years old. You know, and you did this, you started this when you were 23. I'm going to go straight in. I loved watching your TEDx talk. It was brilliant. And the opening line was, my name's Dominic McGregor and I'm an alcoholic. And then you talk through that. And then you end with, I fully believe that I will never drink alcohol again. I don't want to lose my life when I'm young. Is that how serious it got? Is that the rock bottom?
I think that's the... I think for myself, I had a very good... And this probably translates into my life skills a little bit. Is I have a very good idea of looking at where things are going and the path that things can head into. And it's kind of what I've done in my business life, my whole life, is I've looked at trends, I've looked at things and been like, this is where this ends up. And that's what I looked at in my life. As I said, is that if I don't make a change here, this is the sleepwalking steps I do. Because as I said before, I probably was at a point where I was starting to have a damaging impact on the business, to be honest. And that business was everything, you know, it was my business. And if I kept going, there could have easily been a conversation where I was no longer needed in the business or I was damaging the business. And then I lose that. So I'm 24, 25 years old and I've lost my business, which goes on to be a huge success. I'm still drinking in the bottle. You know, I did have thoughts about killing myself when I was in that moment of drinking, and that's when I had a lot to live for. If the road continued and I had nothing to live for and things were kind of continuing to be negative, that is where I think I would have gone. I think that's where I ended up. So was it a situation where I was, you know, choosing between one of those in that moment? No. But it was a case where I needed to make a change, or that's where I was going to go.
Tom, can you explain to people who don't know what Social Chain is and what Social Chain does? Because we talk about it a lot on this podcast, that actually pretty much every industry is soaked in booze. But I do think that there are some where it's more acceptable to integrate alcohol into the day-to-day than others. For example, if a doctor turns up and their hands are shaking, someone notices, not so good. But if you're entertaining clients, for example, in a business meeting, ordering a bottle of whatever, not seen as out of order. What was it like for you?
Well, you're alluding to the kind of media agency landscape there, aren't you? Because that's your background as well. So yeah, I mean, the client servicing world and the media world are probably two industries which are rich in casual dining, or rich in celebrations, or rich in, you know, drinking. And it's widely accepted, if not encouraged, I'd say, by senior people. So when we're the senior people in the business, we're always pushing those agendas in terms of entertaining clients, entertaining the team. And then you throw on the fact that we've got quite a young workforce, that definitely becomes part of the culture. So Social Chain was a social media marketing agency, and we worked with brands to help them on their social media strategies. So that naturally, you know, lends itself to people who were slightly younger, because that's who social media natives were. So I remember the times, you know, we to the point where we put a bar in our office because we thought that's what people did. So we had this bar in this office, and Friday, 3 o'clock, we'd be there celebrating some success of winning a new pitch, winning a new client. And it would be just be accustomed to knocking out a bottle of vodka, a bottle of wine. I remember once when we won an award, and one of our investors sent us 48 crates of wine to the office and said, "Have fun, guys, celebrate."
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it comes hand in hand with the industry we're in, but also the age of the workforce. You know, when the average age of the company is 22, 23 years old, that's what a lot of young people do. So it was a really, really integrated into our lives and accepted that you go for a boozy lunch and you come back and finish off some emails.
And I wanted to ask, you know, so you're at uni, you had the idea for Social Chain, you started up, made it successful. As you say, as a young guy in his 20s, it would be easy to say, you know, I like drinking, I drink heavily, I party hard. It's what young guys do. What happened, and when was it when you started to think, hang on, I'm doing something different to everyone else. I'm going another step further than everyone else around me when it comes to drinking.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's probably the 6 months leading up to when I became sober. So you guys know what it's like. There's a couple of occasions where you try and stop, and a couple of occasions where you fail, and a couple of occasions where you start trying stuff. You know, you start saying, oh, maybe it's the shots, or maybe it's the red wine, or maybe it's this. So I think looking back, for me, the situation started to get bad around November 2015, where, yeah, that's when it started to get bad for me. I was in quite a toxic relationship, and I was also involved in the football game where the Paris attacks were. I was in Paris, and there was quite a lot, you know, I wasn't caught up in anything like bad, but just that kind of being there. We ended up walking the streets that night, and sirens and stuff, and it really had a heightened level of anxiety, and I probably suffered a bit from that. But, you know, got back to the hotel room after 4 hours of walking through Paris with no phone battery, hearing about these shootings going on, walking around every corner thinking, God, are we near it? And then I got home and I remember having a glass of wine and thinking, oh, this calmed me down a little bit. So for that, you know, I kind of snowballed into a couple of situations where at Christmas I went home for my family pantomime. It was the day of I finished work. So I finished work on Christmas Eve and went straight to the pantomime with my family. And I just started drinking when I got home at like 11. And by the time I got to the pantomime at 8 o'clock at night, I was like slurring my words, passing out, falling asleep, so much sober that my dad had to take me home. And that was just like one of those things where everyone was like, what the hell's going on? My family hadn't seen me for months. And then those kind of 6 months just continued to have situations where I was, you know, probably going in when I was drinking, like, you guys know what it's like when you go into yourself and you avoid people who might say something, and you just go off by yourself and you start doing things, you know, and you catch up with your friends the next day and be like, oh my God, what happened last night? I wasn't there, you know, I disappeared, which, you know, in one sense is incredibly dangerous, irresponsible, because you just distance yourself. But for me, it was looking back thinking, if I get away from these people, I can drink more, and I can drink more and no one has to see me. And then it turned to, you know, the evenings at home, it turned into that, it turns into, you know, oh, I'm not going to go out this weekend, I'm just going to stay in the house. And I remember having, you know, Friday, Saturday nights where I just drink. I went to Rome in May bank holiday, and just all it was a bank holiday was getting drunk, you know, wine galore. And then what kind of happened then was like, I'm hurting myself here. So I'm doing damage to myself. I'm doing damage with relationships. I'm like, I'm drunk texting people. I'm saying difficult things to girls, you know, all this kind of stuff. I'm messaging my ex, all that kind of crazy stuff that you do to yourself, which is damaging. And then what happened for me was that, which was the wake up call, was I went from hurting myself, which, you know, sadistically I kind of enjoyed a little bit. It was kind of, you know, the reason I was doing it. But I then have this moment where I start to hurt other people with think my actions and my words. And it was on nights out where I couldn't, I guess, get alone. You know, there was probably times when I was so paralytic and drunk that my friends were like, oh God, we need to look after him. And I would reject help, and I would be argumentative and aggressive towards people who were telling me to do things like slow down, go to bed, you've drank too much, blah, blah, blah. And I was trying to, you know, keep going. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it was that kind of 6 months where, looking back, I definitely knew I had a problem. In the time, obviously, it's part and parcel of being there, is that you just think it's the right thing to do. But it was that change from when people noticed it and my actions were hurting other people. That's what I could never deal with. I could never deal with the pain I caused other people. I could deal with hurting myself and my chances and all that kind of stuff with relationships and that kind of stuff. That was fine. I could physically hurt myself as well, but seeing other people be disappointed in me was when it was too much.
I get that. And so many things that I could say to that. Firstly, on a lighter note, I have to say, when you said going home for a family pantomime, I had this vision of your family putting on a
with your mum and your dad,
and like you coming on stage. Oh, Dom! Oh no, he didn't. Yes, and that would have been amazing.
That would have been such a better story, and probably next time I'll tell it like that. But no, it was we go to one every Christmas. It's family tradition, so we go to every Christmas Eve. So. Yeah, sorry, I should explain that one.
No, brilliant. I totally relate to a lot of things you say, and that made me think back to my own drinking, and I totally forgot I even did this, but certainly I think, in fact, I know on a few times, on a night out, I'd do the whole like, oh, I'm going to go and meet some other friends now, I'll see you later. Actually, it was to drink on my own. And
there was
that, just because it was easier, you could get lost in your own head, you could get more drunk, and the other one that really came to my mind was when, you know, when people give it the whole like, oh, can you believe you did that last night? Oh my God, I can't believe. And in my head, I couldn't remember it at all. I'd had a total blackout, but you laugh it off and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, I remember that. And it was all, just sort of make it up. But I think we become experts at lying to ourselves and obviously lying to other people as well. But it's crazy how it creeps up on you, and without even realizing it, you become better at hiding it, you become better at sneaking it, the excuses and the lies just roll off your tongue. And it's, I think it's amazing as humans, how quickly we can adapt to that negative mindset and that negative behavior.
Yeah, and what I used to do is I used to jump around friendship groups. So like I wouldn't have like 2 weekends in a row with people. So it'd be like people would never tell. It'd be like, Dom's seeing his friends from home, or Dom's staying in Manchester, or Dom's doing this, where it's like you wouldn't put pieces together. And like you say, you become the expert at hiding it. You become the expert at being like, oh, I'll duck out at 12, I'll go home. I'll, this is probably, you know, unique story to me, but I was fortunate enough to be living in a big house at the time. We had 4 floors and we had a basement, which had a cinema room in there and stuff. And, you know, I just get to the point where I could literally lock myself in that cinema room, no lights, taking bottles of wine, and then I could just sit there all day watching movies and just get drunk and fall asleep in there and wake up the next day and no one would know. And I wouldn't cause anyone any trouble. No one would cause any trouble, you know. And I could just do that. And that's what I'd do. I remember on my birthday, my 23rd birthday, I got really drunk the night before. And my actual birthday, I went into that cinema room and didn't leave that cinema room all day. My friends met me at a birthday party. My friends went out for dinner that night to celebrate my birthday without me there. And I just stayed in that room, pitch black, no light, carried on drinking. This must have been the Sunday. Just that was my birthday. That was my 23rd birthday.
That's so bleak, Dom, isn't it? It's really, really
bleak. Sad. Yeah.
And at what point? Were your friends... Sorry, Freddie.
Sorry. No, I was just kidding. What were your friends saying to that? Because I remember I've missed things. I've missed work meetings. I've missed important celebrations that I genuinely wanted to be at. And Were your friends concerned, or were they like, ah, Dom, you know, he's just a bit of a legend. He's missed his own birthday. Hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, we went out the night before, so that's kind of, tipped that thing. But, you know, when you're 23, it's put down to a heavy hangover. But for me, it was definitely more of an avoidance. It was definitely more of a, oh, get rid of these people. I don't want to go. Social anxiety. I just want to stay in this dark room and feel sorry for myself and eat terrible food and carry on drinking. So it gave me, coming back to the point, you know, that's what 8th of May was our birthday. That's 2 months before I had to give up drinking. So it's right at that point where you're getting pretty good at hiding it. You're getting pretty good at, you know, doing it yourself. People noticing. But you're also at a point where you start feeling people might know, so you try and you get even better at hiding it. So, it definitely was a situation where I was like, oh, no, guys, you go, it's fine. I'm not feeling very well, I'll just stay in. But that, you know, the byproduct, that's probably because I did drink too much last night and probably did, can't even remember what time I got to sleep at, but was in such a state that I ruined the next day for myself. So, yeah.
I think it's really important that we talk on this podcast about mental health, in particular men's mental health. And I want to step back because I think it's really important that Freddie's in a better position, far better position. One, he's male, so he could talk far better than I can about this. But having had experience of his own situations, just one question I want to ask you, Dom, is at what point did you realise that alcohol equaled shocking mental health? Because there's so many people that we see and we hear from, be it male, female, or female, there's no link made between the two until it is taken away, and then people look back with hindsight and go, Jesus Christ, this is why I was in such a mess, this is why I felt so awful.
Yeah, that's a great point. And going back to what I talked about earlier in terms of when I chose between the business and the alcohol, you know, is that I could easily make a case for the business being my source of pain. You know, things were starting to get more difficult. You know, I had people problems, cash flow problems. I was like, that's my problem. Alcohol's not a problem. So it wasn't until I sat with, on the day I gave up drinking the last time, the last night, you know, where I went to see a therapist. I got sat down with my friends and said, you need to go speak to a therapist, go and see this CPT therapist. That I kind of just, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what would happen at a therapy session, never been there before. But I just sat down there and just started talking for an hour at him. I was like, this is helping, this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And Jamie, every single anniversary, I message him and say, thank you for saving my life. Jamie Dempsey, you know, is the probably most important person in my life that will never know how much he did for me. He just looked at me, wrote his notes on his piece of paper and just broke it down really simply and said, look, these are the things you're struggling with. These are the mental health issues you're struggling with. The alcohol isn't the problem. The alcohol is the tool you go to medicate. If you remove the alcohol from it, you'll have the clarity and thought to be able to deal with the problems. Simple as that. And I have a bit of, you know, this is 5 years ago, it's before kind of the whole awareness phase of mental health kind of swept about it. And my understanding was from my sports science background, which I did at school, around anxiety, around arousal, around all that kind of stuff that you need in sport. So I had, you know, a really, really basic primitive knowledge, but when it once he explained to me what I was dealing with and that the reason I was drinking was due to my mental health, it just was like Pandora's box opened. It was like, ah, that makes so much sense. Like, why has no one told me this before? And he approached it in such a way where he broke it down into really simple layman's terms and made it really compelling that I could, he felt that he put me, gave me the confidence that I could deal with the problems if I got rid of the alcohol, and that the alcohol was something which was really damaging me as the way I was approaching and feeling things, rather than the alcohol being anything else being the problem. It was the alcohol was just masking my issues that didn't let me deal with my problems.
I think that's really insightful, Dom. I think with that whole male sobriety aspect of thing is, like you say, it is a bit of a minefield. It is Pandora's box. I mean, I know from my point of view, I say I didn't set up my own business, but I worked for a couple of big global tech companies in London. And you know, I went into London just, you know, a guy who didn't, you know, come from much. I'd say I'd been to uni in Manchester. down in the bright lights of London, and I didn't know what I was doing half the time, but I knew I had a real talent for drinking, and the pressure got higher. And then as I got, you know, older and had kids, and you go, you know, you earn more money, and then you have to perform better, and you get more responsibility, it all kind of gets mixed up into the sort of toxic soup, and I knew that by drinking could help it. And yeah, I had the day, I got the biggest promotion at work to a really senior level. I'd hit my paycheck goals, I'd hit all these things, and that was the night I was like, I can't do this anymore. I want to leave a building from the roof, not from the ground floor. And I went into the therapy and everything else. Then I came out and I carried on drinking, and I was telling myself, you've got anxiety, you've got depression, you've got this, you've got that, maybe you've got I was trying to put any label that I could on myself apart from, you need to stop drinking. And I remember I went into therapy just thinking, please don't say stop drinking, please diagnose me with anything you want, give me any pills you want, just don't say I need to stop drinking. And I didn't, and I kind of heard what I wanted to hear from him, didn't stop drinking, then had to go back into therapy a couple of years later. And like I say, it's only when you stop drinking that things kind of start to fall into place. And
yeah, this is one of the things that this is one of the things I feel so thankful for, is that I've not relapsed, and that I seem to have found a therapist which reworked first time. I mean, explaining that to people is I can't, you know, I've heard so many stories about people who have just not had the right type of therapy, they've not had the right person, they've not gelled with the therapist. I actually spent a bit of time speaking to a professional footballer who went through it, who's still a professional footballer, who whose club paid £1,000 for an hour for a therapist for him to get him right. Did terrible. And said he found a guy in Liverpool, £60 an hour, very down to earth, and he just worked for him. But I'm so thankful that worked for me. And you know, coming back to that gradual build up you get of the pressure and all that kind of stuff, it's the alcohol becomes your personality, doesn't it? You become known for that. So when it's like I always explain this a little bit, you know, in that episode of Spider-Man when Venom takes over the body in the black suit, you know, that's what's happening to you, and you start to be known for it, and you start to think, this is the only thing I've got going for me. Or I'm the party guy, I'm the fun guy, I'm always that guy. And like you said, saying taking away drinking, it's like, well, you take away all I've got nothing else behind it. And having to layer back to your bare bones of like personality and rebuild yourself, that's the most terrifying piece. And that's why that is the most terrifying piece. This is me, you know, this is what you get, you know, you don't get anything on top of it, you don't get any medicine in there to make me more fun. It's like, this is what I've got, and this is who I am. And laying naked to your bare bones and telling the world that you're now ready to go with it forward of this personality and have nothing else into it is absolutely frightening.
One thing I struggled with, I approached it in a very man, I think, kind of way. And you know, newsflash for you, Dom, I'm not the most manly bloke you're probably ever going to meet. But I went in there and I was thinking, you know, if I have a problem with my car, I go to the garage and I get it fixed. If I've got a problem with my teeth, I go to the dentist and I get them fixed. I was here saying, I feel like I've got a problem with my head, I can go to the therapist, he'll have a rummage around inside, and I'll walk out whistling and I'll be fixed, and that'll be that. But the truth is, it hasn't been. You know, I still have ups and downs. I still have good weeks, bad weeks. Sometimes I've had weeks when I've got Shazza and Ben on the phone being like, are you all right, Freddie? You know, how's your mental health and everything else? Do you feel that? Are you always on an even keel now, there or thereabouts? Or do you still have highs and lows?
I wish, Freddie, I could tell you that I'm sat there in happy land where I never have highs and lows. But no, I do. I'm constantly challenged. The last lockdown was very, very challenging for me personally. But I think it's now the case of being aware of those issues and being aware of those times when you are getting to those points, be it mentally, be it emotionally, physically, all those kind of pieces, and just being able to do something about it. And that's what I think the sobriety teaches you, especially in those first 6 months when you have to kind of really power through. It is a real struggle, you know, we've all been there, but you do develop the coping mechanisms, be it avoidance, be it food, be it something else, where I can sit there and rationalise, saying, I'm not right now, I'm not in a good place, I'm not happy, I'm not feeling good, But this, for me, is, you know, be it ordering a Domino's pizza, this is better for me than what's the other option. So, and I know, you know, regardless of how bad I feel, and I honestly, you know, I was very, very bad in this last lockdown. I looked at bottles, I smelt them, I felt them. I really did the closest I would have come to. I don't think I ever really got close to drinking it, but it was just that case of feeling that it was there and being tempted and looking at it. I knew that I had to go above and beyond my coping mechanisms to be like, okay, let's just keep yourself happy, keep yourself well. Think super short term. Think about having a massive cookie. Think about having that pizza. Just get through. And it's probably only been since April 12th in the UK, since the lockdown opened, that I've been, all right, okay, that's good. For example, I put on 13 kilograms from January to April. 13 kilograms is a lot to put on. It was 1.2 kilograms a week I put on during lockdown. And that was me coping. So yeah, I mean, I don't get better. My highs, yeah, I feel like the highs are natural and longer, but you know, the challenges like with lockdown this year was very real.
Hi, we're Sound Rebel and we produce this podcast.
We make loads of podcasts and we want to make yours. Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk to find out more.
You forgot the bit about the first free episode.
Oh, and tell us you heard this ad and we'll produce your first episode for free.
Great. Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk now and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
Right, back to the episode.
We are just going to take a quick break from this fascinating episode with Dom McGregor. We'll be back with Dom very, very shortly. It is this part of the podcast. I've just have to tell you this, Freddie and Ben. I've got a bit lispy again tonight. Every Thursday, I have to change the trays in my mouth, my braces. I'll be looking like you soon, Freddie, with your pearly lashes.
100% natural. Absolutely
not. So, it's a bit whistly to say it's this section of the pod we like to call Shazzers Shoutouts. Was that northern enough? Was that loud enough?
Mm-hmm. Tick both boxes.
Thank you. Some lovely, lovely, kind, fabulous listeners have been to overtheinfluence.co.uk and they've all bought us coffees. No alcohol-free beers. Aww. They've all gone for the coffee, which we are loving because we do love a posh brew at Over the Influence. Davey says, I am on my 58th day alcohol-free. You guys are fun and inspiring. Is he listening to
Amazing.
The right pod? Davey, you're an absolute superstar. 58 days, you are well over halfway to 100 days. Oh, blimey, what could possibly happen? It's 100 days, Freddie.
Well, Shazza, funny you said that, because that means it is a telegram from the Queen of Sobriety. As everybody is, hopefully, momentum is building around this thing. It is going viral. We are literally having people from all around the world that are writing in. And I'm loving it because I don't have to do any of the work here. I just came up with the idea. When you hit 100 years old in the UK, you get a telegram from Her Majesty the Queen. But here in the Kingdom of Over the Influence, if you hit 100 days alcohol-free, you can email us and you too can receive your handwritten telegram from the Queen of Sobriety, Sharon Hartley. It's all for free. It's just something that we do because it's fun and we love it. And now, thanks to Ben sharing my email address with the whole bloody wide world on Instagram. Yes, we do have our
email
address.
It's not hard to guess there, is it?
I know. And for some reason, we thought it would be a good idea to share our email addresses.
Because, you know, we're contactable at any time. Get in touch with us direct. You know, we're not some big faceless corporation here. We are just ben@overtheinfluence.co.uk, freddie@overtheinfluence.co.uk, and sharon@overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Right. Did you hear a ping? And this is not even a joke. While you were chatting there, did you hear a ping?
Well, hopefully not, because, you know, if you're a true podcast professional, you'll have turned all your devices off or at least set them to silent before recording.
Because I'm not, I got a massive ping right during this episode. This is not a joke. This has just dropped into my inbox, right? Sharon at overtheinfluence.co.uk. I'll just use this person's first name. Hello, Deirdre. And she's just emailed this second to say, I have just reached 100 days alcohol-free.
Yes! Amazing! This is happening live.
This is happening live. Right?
This is the fast-paced world of Over the Influence. Deirdre, just hit it now. That's amazing.
Well done, Deirdre.
And I can see Shazza, she is getting her little book of envelopes out of her purse and she's getting ready to go. Your telegram's on its way.
Honestly, they're behind me here. So she says she's got a massive, big smile on her sober face, looking like the cat that got the cream. Keep being amazing. You guys do more than you'll ever know. Well, Deirdre, big up yourself. That has just dropped live into the podcast as we speak. Yes,
amazing.
Send me your address because I tell you what, you have earned one of our crappy little postcards.
Hey, they're great. And we've got bloody loads of them to give away. So
we've
get
got
in touch
hundreds.
With us. In fact, you know, you hear, obviously, Shazza presents a version of herself on this podcast. She's a measured, lovely, kind woman.
Yes,
we got the other side of Shazza a few weeks ago and she sent a message, hey, I've got 300 bloody orange envelopes in my kitchen. Where are these bastard postcards? They're coming, I'm sorry.
I am speechless. I'm speechless. You're not wrong, man. You're not wrong. I tell you, I wasn't happy. Very quickly now, Davina bought us a coffee. She says, I thought it was about time I got the next round in. Love your podcast. Can't wait to see what's next. Lovely Tyne. I love that name. Tyne has sent us a coffee also. And finally for now, there are just so many messages. It will be an episode in itself. I just want to say hello to Joseph, who sent us a DM on Instagram. Big fan of Lucy Spraggan. You can hear that episode with Lucy. The sober superstar in series 2 is 10 days sober. He's smashing it. He's loving it. And just thank you for getting in touch. To every single person that takes the trouble to email, send us a DM, react to our things, comment on social media. From the hearts of our bottoms, as always, thank you so, so much. We literally couldn't do it without you.
We should say, this time next week, can you believe it, our community, it's Boris's Freedom Day on the 19th of July. It's our Alcohol Freedom Day. Because, Freddie, what's happening?
We've got something amazing coming, Ben. And I know I mess around a lot, not just on this podcast, but in real life as well. But this is something that we're so serious and so excited about. And we can't give too much away. There's going to be a special episode that talks all about this, but I will say this ain't a Facebook group. This isn't us saying, oh, we're going to just do something small and insignificant. This is big. We've put all of ourselves into this. This has been building now for months and months. We never planned to do this. We've only been taking this step because so many people have been asking us to do it, and we said, right, we need to make this happen somehow. And we found a way to make it happen. It's going to be amazing. People literally around the world are talking about it. We're getting messages about it. I can't wait to let people in to this amazing sober kingdom we've created, because it is really, really going to be exciting and something special.
It's a really tricky one. I think everybody's story is so different, regardless of age or gender. But I do think I just want to get hold of every young man that is struggling in the 20s and go, you know, I think this is the maternal instinct in me coming out. There is another way you can do this.
Please, God,
talk to somebody. Talk to anybody. Yeah. And actually, Dom, I mean, you're the person to ask. Could you have spoken to a mate? Would it have helped? What would have helped you in those darkest times in your early 20s when you're thinking, God, I need to do something about this? Because sometimes it's as simple as talking, isn't it? And starting.
Yeah, I think the key is someone telling you need to do something about it, because you don't think there's anything wrong. You know, you don't go to the alcohol. That's the last thing you go to when it comes to, like, you know, are you going to go out next weekend with your mates? Yeah, you are. You're going to drink? Yeah, you are. You don't think the alcohol is the problem because everyone else is doing it. It's a whole societal thing. So what helped was someone telling me I need to do something about it. And it's quite sad, and this is quite sad, and something I definitely have realised is that I now see me and people when I go out and see people drinking. I'm like, oh shit, that was what I was like. And like, you're like, oh my God, that person's not in a good place. I think that person's got something wrong with them. That breaks me. That breaks my heart because it's no one around. It takes something really big to accept that you need to make a change. But also, it just takes someone to tell you that you need to make a change. And those people are very rare. They're very rare because normally there's people alongside you who are drunk as well, so they're not even looking at you. Mm. You're not going to listen to it from a parent because it's going to be preaching, and you're not going to really question your own drinking that often because it's just a horrible place to go into. So how do you make that change when everyone else your age is doing the same thing?
I've had friends that have been in similar places. Like you say, I've noticed it in them. I'm noticing it in a good friend of mine at the moment. And there's a balance because, and if I think back to my journey, I had lots of people on various occasions, not only friends, but bosses and HR departments saying to me, you need to knock this on the head. But I wasn't ready to change. So I just told myself an excuse. I said, they were wrong. They were just out to get me. They were just trying to sabotage my career. All these stupid bullshit excuses because I wasn't ready to have a look inside myself and say, I need to change. Do you think, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but do you think someone can't change until they're ready to change? Or do you think that force of other people can get them to see the reality of it?
So I have this analogy that everyone's like, one of those lights that used to be at the disco, you know, those kind of glow in the dark lights at school discos, which you had to crack and then they started glowing. I think that's what people are like, unfortunately.
Ah.
I think you have to break.
You have to break before you start to shine.
Yep.
I think that's one of my favourite analogies so far. It's a bit of a sad one, but I like the fact it's all shiny later on.
Yeah, it is. And you see with people, you know, you guys are probably similar. You probably have people you've coached before through it, and you can just tell they're not ready. They've not had the light bulb moment's not happened. They've not broken. They've not lost what they needed to lost to be able to make that change. And it's a really tragic piece is that I don't think people are ready to change until they need to change. And that comes down when I think about that from someone who's 23 years old. They don't. This doesn't sit high on their agenda. It really doesn't sit high on their agenda. So they carry on. And it only happened for me is because I had something else. I had a company outside of it. And I know I'm an outlier, an anomaly in that situation, is that I don't think that ready to change piece happens early enough. I think people do have to go to a dark place. And this is, again, comes back to quite a morbid thought. It's like one of the most questions I get asked in interviews is, what would you go and tell your 18-year-old self? Would you tell them not to go drink? Or what advice would you know? Like that question that everyone asks. And I'm sat there thinking, no. Like, I am so grateful and thankful for what I went through. Like, the horrible times, the pain I caused myself, all that kind of stuff, like waking up in hospital. I am thankful for that. I'm thankful for it. Like, it was the most important thing that happened in my life. And, like, to explain that to people who... It feels very weird to say that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
But wouldn't it be great if we could, I don't know, rub the glow stick instead to make it glow? Wouldn't it be great if we could catch people before it snapped?
And that's what I say, that's what I talk about my aim being, is like helping people realise the potential before it's too late, and stopping people going to a place where I had to go to get back out of it. You know, thankfully I had enough to get out of it. You know, I had enough going on outside me. Thankfully, I had a great family structure. I had a business partner who supported me. I had financial resources to go and do things. Not everyone's as fortunate as I am. And that is my kind of aim and why I talk so open about sobriety, is that I would love to create a world where you can rub the glow stick. You can, the glow stick doesn't need to break to shine. It just turns the switch on and goes from there. Because we are all have potential inside of us from a young age. We all have we can all achieve great things. It's just things that need to happen for us to do that. And that a lot of that is about instilling the confidence in individuals, about just believing in them and helping them on their way. And that's, you know, a lot about what I want to do now in my life is that.
See, you said that nothing's off limits, Dom, and I wanted to talk a bit about success. And I think that the Hollywood version of many people's stories is that they, you know, they're in a place, they stop drinking, then they start the business, they get the, you know, the business success, the financial success and everything else, and it's all happily ever after. On Over the Influence, we prefer to look at things in real life. And it's probably fair to say that you got a good amount of success whilst you were still drinking. Mm-hmm. Do you think success played a role? Either, you know, and again, I'm being quite lazy with that term of success and pretending that success is just about, you know, business and finances and money and everything else. But do you think success has played either a negative or a positive way in your relationship with alcohol?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic thing. I think, yeah, it definitely did. You know, it made me feel, being 21 years old and having a business where you've raised millions of pounds of investment and you're working with some of the world's biggest clients in marketing makes you feel 10 feet tall, which then makes you feel invincible, which then just fuels the monkey, the chimp inside of you to drink more and feel like you're untouchable. And it brings out a horrible, horrible personality within you because you become as horrible, you know, You're absolutely fueled with ego. You're fueled with invincibility. You just become this horrible narcissist. And I was feeling that with alcohol. I was feeling that little version inside of me with alcohol constantly. And he was winning the battle. You know, I'm sure most of you guys have read The Chimp Paradox by Dr. Steven Peters, and I do quote that book as the book which did, you know, help me on this journey to really do save me. And I do believe that, you know, I had this chimp inside of me, this alter ego, which was just being fueled by everything outside of me, the work, the validation, the alcohol. The interesting part where I think about success is that it was so quick. You know, we went from university dropouts to million pound business in 18 months, that it did speed the process up. And I think I would have gone on the process regardless, be it through a normal career, be it through anything. So I could be at a point where maybe at 28, I've had the same situation I was facing when I was 23. But because everything was accelerated, I got through it quicker. Again, going back to what I just said about it being the best thing I ever did, the pain was probably harder. I don't know. Gradual sleepwalking pain is probably worse than a really quick flash in the pan, I guess. So I don't know how you view that, but it definitely accelerated everything. And I think, regardless of, you know, social chain or whatever, my personality probably would have led me to alcohol abuse anyway. So I'm glad that the success played a part, but it definitely played a part in fueling it and played a part in helping me get over it.
You mentioned it towards the start of the interview where you said you've got a real talent for seeing where things are going and seeing the direction of you know, what the public likes and an opinion and so on. So where do you think sobriety is going, and where do you think the UK's attitudes to alcohol are going?
Good question. I did tweet the other day that I do think alcohol will end up being viewed the same as cigarettes.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting one.
Controversial, to say the least. But I do think there is a movement now towards sobriety. There's a movement towards health and well-being, and a lot of people I've talked to have tried a lot of things. And you know, you talk to PT, gym, and the first thing they say is, if you want to lose weight quicker, just cut alcohol. You know, for them, it's a health hack. But when the voice for sobriety is getting louder and louder, and you start to see influences like football players, influences like musicians, other people vouching for it, and the, let's call it the culture towards... Have we got a culture towards success at the moment where people are trying to become entrepreneurs and people are trying to make things happen and do things? We probably do. It's probably been a time in their lives when success is probably something which people are now proud of. You know, the UK is probably shied away from it a little bit. And you've got everyone sharing hacks about, you know, clean eating, waking up at 6, having cold showers, all that kind of stuff. And like, if you were to ask me, every single time I've gone to a conference or spoke to someone and they've given me one of their hacks and it's meditate for half an hour, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff that we hear and see, all of that falls at the wayside when you throw in stopping drinking, because it has a hack for everything. Clarity of thought, sleep, energy, money, financial, saving money. It is the single biggest hack anyone can have. And like all these people trying fad stuff, you know, all this kind of stuff, people are waking up to the real benefit of having sobriety in their lives. We're still in a place where questioning people's drinking is very contentious. And they've been like, well, I don't drink that much. But like, we're coming now to a society of people who are open and accepting it and seeing it as a genuine way to accelerate their lives to a place they want to be, across all assets, you know, personally, professionally, financially, all those areas can be improved by not drinking. I always say that, you know, imagine if the world was brand new, okay? And imagine, you know, I had a conversation with you and I said to you, you're, you know, 28-year-old. And I said, I'm going to tell you something, okay? It's going to save you probably £400 a month, okay? It's going to give you the energy to go and do the things you want to do. It's going to give you the time to do the things you want to do. And it doesn't cost you anything. It's free. Doesn't that sound like the best thing ever I could sell to you?
Yeah.
It does. I'm like,
everyone's like, well, yeah. And I say, okay, all it is stop drinking. Then everyone's like, no, I can't do that. But the way people are seeing the benefits of it now, it's not like vegan was 18 months ago, 25 months ago, where it was on trend, but it's definitely on that trajectory where it's becoming the thing where people are like, I think I'm going to do it.
Gregor, bloody hell, I don't know where to start. It's been really inspiring and I feel like a weird, proud auntie because I'm so old. Dom, you're 28 years old, you know, you're approaching 5 years alcohol-free, you've smashed it. Thank you for sharing your lows with us on this episode, but better than that, thank you for sharing all the highs. I know that there will be people listening, in particular, It's the young men. We want to hear your story. And you just mentioned there about the voice of sobriety. Thank you for adding yours in such a positive way to what we do on the Over the... I can't even speak. Hang on, Bev. I've got some
new
braces in.
What's the podcast called, Lev? What's the podcast called?
I'll try it again. On the Over the Influence podcast, polished as ever. Dom, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. If people want to follow you on social media or find out a little bit more about you, how can they do that?
Yeah, they can follow me on Twitter at Dominic McGregor or on Instagram at DPJ McGregor. Just drop me a tweet or a message and I'll get back to it. And from my side, guys, thank you for doing this. You know, you are behind that driving force of what is making this topic much more open to talk about and driving positive change in people. So, you know, huge thank you to you guys for creating this platform and wishing you guys all the best. And I'm looking forward to coming back on next time.
Discover more shows on the Sound Rebel Network.
Like Men Lose Weight.
This is Men Lose Weight, a podcast about four blokes who partied hard through their 20s together and now they think, maybe we should try and lose a bit of weight in their 30s together.
Be honest now, lads. Have you ever been in the middle of a personal training session and feigned an injury?
Guys, so I moved from Birmingham to Nottingham 2 years ago, right? Turns out I've been paying for a gym for 2 years that I live over 100 miles away from.
I guarantee at one point or another, he said, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels.
He obviously didn't try that pizza. Did you try that pizza that came out this year? The one good thing about 2020 where it's like KFC and pizza combined.
I have lost £3 this week.
Just so you know the numbers, I've also lost £3 this week.
Whoa!
I'm down to 17 stone 4.
I have also lost £3 this week.
What? You are joking me.
I am £1 down this week.
All
well
good.
Done, mate.
We've all lost, progress. Which is definitely definitely better than last week, boys. Well done.
A lot better than last week.
£10 in a week, boys.
Well, that's like a bait. That's more than my baby weighed when he was born. So we've lost that collectively in a week. So, I mean, if you want to look at that, that's pretty decent, isn't it?
Men Lose Weight from Sound Rebel. Listen now on your chosen podcast app.